from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the makers of Frankenfish push back against their detractors. Changes are afoot at the University of Alaska's Fishery Technology Center. And which gear group whines the most? Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org.
The company that wants to produce genetically modified salmon is pushing back against its critics, and it's gathering support from trade groups that claim politics are getting in the way of science. But opponents in Alaska say the arguments won't change their minds. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld has more.
Alaska's fishing industry opposes commercial development of genetically modified salmon. That's led to congressional action to stop regulatory review, which could block production and sales. Now, the developer is fighting back. After turning down numerous interview requests, Aqua Bounty Technologies, which wants to market the fish, is speaking up. It's increased its conversations with the news media, and it's being joined by the Biotechnology Industry Organization and the Animal Agriculture Coalition, which includes fish, cattle, and poultry producers. Ronald Stoddish is president of Massachusetts-based Aqua Bounty.
We understand the sensitivity of the fishermen and the fisheries industry in Alaska. However, our product, we believe, does not represent a threat to them, as it will simply displace an imported product that's coming in from offshore at the present time.
His company's fish are Atlantic salmon with an added Chinook gene that doubles growth speed. Opponents call them Frankenfish and wonder what other changes might be in store. Here's how Alaska Congressman Don Young put it when he pushed through an amendment that would keep the FDA from spending money on approving the product.
No one's had a chance to study the effect upon the wild salmon, or can they in fact pollute the wild salmon in kind. So I argue until that's done, there should be no making it legal.
His measure passed, and a similar one is pending in the Senate. Aqua Bounty Stoddish says the modified salmon have been studied and shown to be safe.
It's been portrayed in the media as a bizarre concoction that's somehow natural. But the fact of the matter is that this is a change of less than 1/10,000th of 1% of the entire genetic material of the fish. That's less change than one normally sees, for instance, in normal sexual mating.
Critics worry that the fast-growing fish could escape and compete with Pacific species. British Columbia marine biologist Alexandra Morton says they could also affect parasites or diseases that prey on wild salmon.
We also don't know with the genetically modified fish how the different pathogens are going to respond to these fish and whether it's going to invite mutations or some other change in the pathogen situation.
A recent laboratory study showed genetically modified male salmon could spawn with wild female Atlantics. That led to concerns that escapees could establish their own populations or crossbreed with wild species. But Stoddish says the salmon his company wants to market cannot escape or mate at all.
What the application is for land-based contained cultivation of all female, sterile as in unable to reproduce, populations that will be reared only in FDA-inspected facilities.
Other concerns include impacts on the market. Critics say retail customers' fears of genetically modified food could alienate them from all salmon, and they worry a faster-growing fish will take market share away from wild-caught Alaskan fish. Stoddish says his product will compete against farmed Atlantics from Norway, Chile, and British Columbia, and that won't hurt the Alaska market.
A significant portion of the salmon consumed in the United States is the Atlantic salmon, which is a different species, and is marketed very differently and separately, and is, in fact, a source of significant trade deficit. And imported fish is basically being brought into the United States from great distances.
If approved by the FDA, he says his company will try raising the salmon in Panama. He also says he's found interest from fish farmers in the United States and Canada, though Canada's aquaculture trade group opposes genetic modifications. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game is concerned about Kenai River king salmon. Under pressure from the Kenai River Sports Fishing Association, Fish and Game shut down the Upper Cook Inlet sockeye set net fishery late last Sunday over concerns that not enough late-run kings were making it to spawning grounds. Because of a very strong late sockeye run, Fish and Game had just days before increased commercial fishing opportunity to insure against overescapement. The agency says if the commercial gill set net fishery wasn't shut down, the river would likely not meet its minimum escapement goals for kings. The run of sockeye salmon is far greater than predicted this year, and the price has also increased from no more than $1.20 a pound last year to $1.75 this season.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
A little more than a year ago, the University of Alaska's Fishery Industrial Technology Center on Near Island in Kodiak lost its director. In December, Paula Cullenberg, the program leader of the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program at the University of Alaska Fairbanks School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, was appointed interim director of the Fish Tech Center. Around that same time, the university began a major program review of the center that has led to some changes in how the center will operate. A task force of university and seafood industry personnel was put together and over the course of 5 months looked at what was going on at the center and whether or not it was serving industry and connecting with the university and community.
From the university's perspective was, you know, of course, Kodiak is a seafood town. It's, you know, one of the, I think, what, third largest port in the nation for seafood, and Alaska is a seafood fishing state, So, of course, the university wants to support that and, you know, be engaged and do as good a job as it can working with the industry and, you know, are we doing that and can we do that better? So that was what the program review was all about.
Cullenberg said the committee found that a lot was going on at the Fish Tech Center, but not a lot of people knew about it.
I think the committee felt that there wasn't a lot of communication outwardly, that Fish Tech didn't have a system for getting their information out to the public on a regular basis and directly to the industry, you know, what this is what we do, this is what we can do. And then I think the committee also found that the Fish Tech Center as part of the university was a little bit isolated from the rest of their colleagues around the university, other faculty members. The graduate students there were not necessarily connected with the other students in the fisheries programs around the state. So those were kind of the big findings.
The findings from the review led the university to expand the Fish Tech Center's role in the school community and also the seafood industry. One of the ways they're doing that is by offering distance learning classes to students all over the state via video conferencing.
They can take classes with each other and they can kind of be one big cohort instead of, you know, three or four students in Kodiak and a few here and a few there. And that, I think, really gives students a lot more choices, and it also gives them opportunities to interact with each other. And so in Kodiak, there'll be two undergraduate classes that are going to be offered all over the state, and one of them is a class that's been going on for a few years called Introduction to Fisheries Utilization, basically what happens to the fish that are caught in Alaska. And then the other one will be Introduction to Aquaculture.
She said that all other research on seafood still struggles for funding, and the university must continually seek creative sources to ensure important research is getting done.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
During a press conference in Ketchikan on Friday last week, U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski responded to questions about the actions of her fisheries advisor, Arnie Fugelvog. Fugelvog admitted to falsifying his commercial fisheries catch records between 2001 and 2006. During that time, he was also a member of the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Fugelvog joined Murkowski's staff in September of 2006. On April 8th of this year, he signed a plea agreement, accepting a sentence of 10 months in prison with $150,000 in fines and penalties. Murkowski says at the end of June, Fugelvog told her that he was going to enter the plea agreement and admit to fisheries violations. She says he did not tell her about the April 8th agreement, though. Murkowski says she asked for his resignation at that time, but allowed him to remain on staff until the end of July to allow the legal process to follow its course.
We know in this state there's been things that have gone on with Department of Justice with certain individuals and with some people. They were things that went on for years, and with some individuals, nothing ever came of them. So I was prepared to let the legal process play out until such time as there was actually anything filed with the court, and that all happened on the 1st of August. So that was the timing.
Murkowski says the effects of Fugelvog's actions go beyond the legal ramifications.
It's just a tragedy at many levels. I think many people here, particularly in Southeast, know Arnie, have worked with Arnie. He's a Southeasterner. You know, he's a Petersburg boy. But what Arnie did was wrong. And he has acknowledged that. He has admitted that through this plea agreement. And he will suffer the consequences, and the consequences are quite substantial.
In addition to the legal and financial consequences, Murkowski says trust has been lost.
I think this is very hard for so many of us because we know him, we have established relationships, and he's, particularly here in Southeast, he's one of us. And I think it hurts when you realize that one of us has not honored the trust that we had in him. It's unfortunate.
Murkowski says she's in the process of finding a replacement for Fugelvog as her fisheries advisor. Competitiveness is a hallmark of the commercial fishermen, and while they certainly compete in their own gear group, it's those other guys who really get their ire up. Fish Radio's Stephanie Mangini hit the docks in Kodiak last week to find out who the biggest whiners are in the industry.
Who do you think the biggest whiners are in the fishing fleet?
Probably those who are less fortunate in catching the most fish.
Definitely the trawl fleet.
I'd have to say the anti-trawl activists.
And why?
Because they want our fish.
I do believe that the processors are.
And why?
Why? Because they have a long, monotonous, boring job.
Draggers and crab fishermen.
And why?
Because they're just whiners. Draggers are lazy, and crab fishermen are old.
No, the fishermen themselves, I can't really say any fishermen are a whiny group. It's the people making the rules and regulations who've never been on a fishing boat that are probably the whiniest.
Who's topping the charts for the biggest whiners?
I would have to say the gillnetters.
And why?
Because they're the ones writing up all the proposals.
The statewide fishing fleet.
The statewide fishing fleet, the biggest whiners.
Probably the Cook Inlet fishermen, Cook Inlet drifters.
Okay, why?
Well, they think everyone's intercepting all their fish and catching their fish. Think, you know, it's always someone else's fault if their fish don't come.
Gillnetters.
Why?
Because they're not really fishermen. It's a bunch of lawyers and doctors that decide they want to come up to Alaska and fish, and they don't really know what it's about.
This salmon fisherman believes that the biggest whiners are the women.
The fishermen's wives, by far. They are always complaining about the men being away and needing this and needing that, and definitely the wives.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, KMXT's Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak, KRBD's Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, and Fish Radio's Stephanie Mangini in Kodiak. From KMXT, also in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.